great to, again this year, thanks to Vanderbilt University and others, to have the Fogarty International Clinical Research Scholar with the National Institute of Health. And this is the third year that we've been able to collaborate and get this scholar here. So we're tickled this year to have Dr. Jim Zembrisky with us. And by the way, Dr. Carabin from Oklahoma University is here with us, our international health colleague who's done so much work in helping these programs come together too. But Jen, back to you. She received her BS in biology and her DDM from Tufts, plus a certificate in international veterinary medicine with a concentration in conservation medicine. She's currently working on her PhD. She can't find a job, so she's going to keep going to school. At Cornell. And there's a Cornell graduate across the way from you here. Since completing an undergraduate degree, she's been involved in a number of international research projects, including Nipah virus, so she probably knows our friend Mike, and in Malaysian fruit bats, tuberculosis in Asian elephants in Nepal, and more recently she's been involved in developing avian influenza vaccination protocol for domestic ducks in Borneo. And this goes on, talking about some of the neat things that she's done, but it's pretty important to say that in her spare time she loves kayaking and cooking, so she ought to move to Colorado. So, without any further, Dr. Chen, and where did we put it? We left it up
right
there?
Here. Perfect. Okay. No worries. Thank you for the wonderful introduction, and along those lines, if any of you do have aspiring veterinary students or PhD students who want to go on to careers in global health, please come and talk to me, because this Fogarty experience was phenomenal, and I would be happy to talk to your students and to put you in touch with the right people. So today I am going to talk about my Fogarty year and some work that I did in Peru looking at the effect of sample volume and storage temperature on Brucella melanogaster isolation from goat milk. This is work that actually was inspired by some challenges that I encountered when I was working in Bolivia. And we'll talk about that as we move on through this presentation, but just go into it with the mindset that we're working in resource-poor settings and we don't always have a lab around the corner, and that we have to be thinking about these things. So a little bit of background on Brucella, in case it's been a while for you guys. It is a zoonotic pathogen. Its transmission commonly occurs through the ingestion of unpasteurized dairy products or contact with fetal tissues. And in a farm setting, this is usually an aborted fetus. The farmer goes, moves the fetus, contact occurs. In Latin America, Peru, Mexico, and Argentina have the highest reported prevalences. And also within these countries, most often human brucellosis is attributed to Brucella melanogaster. So, clinical signs and symptoms, a nice retained placenta for you early in the morning. Males, orchitis and arthritis. Females, also arthritis, but retained fetal membranes and abortion. And abortion, obviously, from a production standpoint, is really what's most concerning to people in resource-poor settings who are trying to feed their families. So in men, undulating fever and joint pain, same thing in women, but also with the addition of spontaneous abortion. This is obviously disconcerting, because in the first and second trimesters, this can be as high as 40% incident, which is just not acceptable. So obviously a huge public health concern. And adding to this is the fact that when goats are infected, they're infected for life. When we're trying to control this infection, we really need to be thinking in terms of test and cull, not treatment. It's just not feasible. Even though a goat might appear healthy, you can still go and culture out these nasty organisms from udder secretions, which is known as witch's milk. It's pretty disgusting. So really, we have to be thinking about what's practical, what's feasible in an international setting. Serology and milk culture are the primary means of diagnosis. Obviously, it's a lot easier to milk a goat than it is to collect a blood sample, especially in a resource-poor setting where you just don't have technical expertise to do these things. And I would also argue that, culturally speaking, collecting a milk sample is a little bit more practical. I, in a number of situations, have been out with physicians trying to test children, and farmers will just shove their children right towards you, but to get your hands on their goat is next to impossible. So I think if you're milking a goat, it's a little less invasive and a little less scary for a goat farmer who just doesn't understand why you're there with a respirator and gloves for something that they milk every day. So, out in a resource poor setting, you're trying to do control and eradication programs. You are at best a 4-day journey from the closest town. How are you going to store your samples? How much do you need? What's the appropriate method? And this was the exact problem that I came up against in Bolivia. I was working on a program there, and I had to get milk to Lima from a town that was 100 kilometers outside of Cochabamba, and I just did not know how I was going to do it. And I didn't know what the effects were going to be on my culture yields, and so I went to the literature, and I didn't find anything. Most of the work was done in the 1970s by Farrell. We still use Farrell's medium. It's fantastic. But it was all under the assumption that we were working in developed countries where we had immediate access to laboratories and to facilities, and it just didn't account for these constraints of cold chain and transport, which are very real. So I wanted to assess the impact of storage temperature and sample volume on culture yield under a simulated field condition. And I did this by looking at two different storage temperatures. I took 4 degrees Celsius, because this is approximately like storing on ice, and minus 20. And the reason for that was that it's often assumed that you can just freeze milk and it's okay. But there's tons of published information out there that if you collect milk samples from mastitic cows and you freeze it, depending on what species you're trying to isolate, your culture yields go down. So freezing always isn't always the best answer, and it's variable with different species of bacteria. I wanted to look at sample volumes because if you've ever tried to milk a goat in rural Bolivia, who is like in the 400th month of her lactation and has absolutely no access to food or water, it's like milking a stone and your thumbs are going to fall off by the end of the day. So in order to find a way to account for this variation in sample volume and how it might affect culture yield, I decided to store samples in two different types of aliquots. And I did decide to store samples for a 7-day duration. And I did this because I wanted to simulate what it would be like to get from the field to the lab. So I went to the very far north of Peru, to Tumbes. There's currently not active vaccination programs there. There are not current reported cases of human brucellosis, and there are large goat populations, so that I could get a clean sample of milk. I did test all of my goats serologically with Rose Bengal and lateral flow. They were all negative. An interesting note, lateral flow assays in goats are combined IgG and IgM, and in people they are separate. And again, that goes back to the issue of practicality. It's not going to change what we do if we know how recent the infection is. All 25 goats were seronegative, and then went back out to farms and collected 100 mils of milk from each goat, which was quite a feat and took a lot of coordination with my farmers to make sure that these goats had full udders by the time I arrived in the morning. So I got a total of 2.5 liters of milk and I pooled it. And from that pooled sample, I took 1,000 milliliters. I removed 50 milliliters for a negative control. And from that remaining 950 mils of pooled milk, I spiked it with Brucella melitensis strain 16M to achieve a final concentration of 10 to the 4 CFUs per mil. I then divvied that up into 2 ml aliquots, and I stored it at two different temperatures, minus 20 and 4 degrees Celsius. I also divvied it up into 5 ml aliquots, and again, stored it at two different temperatures, and then I waited for 7 days. And then, after that 7 days, I began my culturing process. And I will tell you that, as we'll talk about what happened in these four groups, but it's also just important to know now that all of my controls were negative, and there were negative controls associated with each culture group. So we've spiked it, we've stored it, we went ahead and inoculated it into 8 mLs of Yukon broth, because this is an excellent enrichment media for dairy. Subcultured it with modified Farrell's and Brucella selective supplement, waited the designated amount of time. All of the plates that were exhibiting growth did so within 4 to 5 days. Everything that was negative stayed negative. So we did our data analysis with descriptive measures and multivariable logistic regression. I used my outcome variable was dichotomous with culture result. My predictor variables were storage temperature, sample volume, and their interaction. The obligatory PhD scary.
Gary's very happy.
And it was all independent, non-normal, and non-constant variance. And I have to put that up, otherwise they throw me out of the PhD nerd club. So, results. As you can see, group one, minus 20 degrees Celsius, 2 mLs, had a 58% positive culture. And our best group was group four, 4 degrees Celsius, 5 mLs, 98% positive cultures. And just another way to look at this graphically, you can see there's obviously a big difference with a larger sample volume and a slightly warmer temperature. So how come? What does it mean? Looked at two different models. In the first model, I included temperature, volume, and the interaction, but found the interaction to be non-significant, so removed it from the model. And found in my new model that when I control for volume, a temperature of 4 degrees Celsius is significantly better than minus 20. And when I control for temperature, a volume of 5 milliliters is significantly better than a volume of 2. And so what does this mean? Basically, storage temperature and sample volume are important for culture yield. The odds of being culture positive are 3.87 times greater for 4 degrees Celsius storage temperature. And the odds of being culture positive are 8.56 times greater for 5 ml storage volume. So, bottom line is that in resource poor countries, we have to try and account for these constraints and figure out how this is going to affect our work and our data. And I think that in these settings, ice is pretty readily available, as are coolers. It's a much better way to go about doing this. So if you can store your samples at a proper temperature and collect an adequate volume, you've got a great chance at an excellent outcome. And I also think this is useful for people who are working on this disease in developing countries, because this is a disease of developing countries, to help you maybe interpret your data and say, should I have expected better results because I didn't store this the right way? Or if I am limited in the way I can store and transport, how might this impact my work? We're trying to obviously reduce stress and strain and reduce bacterial overgrowth. And I think the next logical step is liquid nitrogen. It's a rapid freeze, less crystallization, and liquid nitrogen tanks are much more readily available these days. So obviously the downside to them is you can't go on a plane. So my field team in Tumbes, they were fantastic. Thanks to them, and many thanks to Fogarty for the phenomenal experience. And I'm happy to answer any questions about Brucella or goats or Fogarty if you want to know. It's not so much in the butchering process as it is in with milking and aerosolization, but eating cooked meat, by no means.
How do the farmers respond to the acetal control programs then?
So basically what happens is we say, when you get ready to cull your next goat, cull this one. There just aren't programs in place to replace these animals. And when they do happen, it's usually not an even match. So, here's your 3-week-old kid, and they've just given up a lactating pregnant female. They're not very well received.
Thank you. I got a question for you, I'm gonna say.
How do you eat?